This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us.
I've got a very well-known conductor on the phone from London. His name is Kenneth Woods. He's an American, but he's been living in the UK for quite a while. He's a resident. He's also a composer and cellist. He's the principal conductor of the English Symphony Orchestra and guest conducts literally everywhere. He's the artistic director of Colorado's Mahler Fest in May, which I will attend, and the Elgar Festival in Worcester, which I believe follows in late May, early June every year. He conducts, records, writes, perhaps best known for his recordings of the composer Hans Gall, his symphonies. He literally has brought Gall back into being after being forgotten for many, many years. His blog, A View from the Podium, is very popular among Catholic music blogs. But the thing that I've asked him to talk about and to play excerpts from is what is called the 21st Century Symphony Project. Kenneth Woods, welcome to Church and Culture.
It's great to be here, Dale. Thank you for having me on.
You know, the one thought I had, of course, a lot of people did think the symphony died more or less after Shostakovich, but you know, in an age that rejects totalizing viewpoints, you know, viewpoints that encompass and synthesize and connect things, it seems like the idea of a 21st century symphony project is a little bit countercultural.
Well, I'd like to think that in the best sense of the word, it's revolutionary in that it's, you know, attempting to challenge some of the assumptions of the status quo that have been dominant for the last 50 years or so.
And so how did this come about? Because as I told you in an email, I really do think it is going to change the history of Western music, classical music, once it's all, you know, in the can, so to speak, and had a very, very broad influence. How did it come about?
I suppose there's two contributing factors. I think the first was very long simmering and building up over time, and that was as I became first a student conductor and then a young professional conductor and started looking at scores with the view to trying to understand the process of the composer. One is really brought directly into contact with the idea that somebody had to write these pieces, and there was a day before there was a Mahler 9. There was a month before there was a Brahms 1. I mean, these pieces weren't always there, and someone had to write them, and someone had to premiere them, and when these things have been brought into the world, it's an incredible gift to humanity, really. Christopher Rouse, the great American composer who just died last week, said that composers are savers of souls, but it's a gradual process, one work at a time, and I was always fascinated with the idea of what happens in the world when Mozart's 41st symphony goes from not existing to existing. The more immediate and personal stimulus, I think, was living through that process with my friend, the composer Philip Sawyers. I met Philip in the course of conducting a project with the Kent County Youth Orchestra here in the United Kingdom. In that orchestra, we alternate full orchestra rehearsals with the conductor, who in this case was me, with sectional rehearsals, which are led by leading members of the various London orchestras, the LPO, LSO, Philharmonia. And Philip, who was a longtime violinist in the opera house orchestra at Covent Garden, has for many, many years coached the second violins in KCYO. So we became friends in the course of that first week of me working with the youth orchestra. And at the end, he very shyly sort of pulled me aside and said, I hate to threaten our nascent friendship by telling you that I'm a composer and asking you to listen to my music, but I am, and would you please? And I said, well, of course I would. And there was a little bit of to and fro of him sending a CD of some of his works, which actually was corrupt and wouldn't play. And I thought, well, that's not a very good sign if you can't even get the thing
to right. Play.
I finally got the music and popped on the recording, and on the second attempt, it played, and within 3 minutes, I thought, oh my goodness, I've met a genius. And that does not happen all that long.
And I agree with you completely. That's my reaction to his music and to from a lot of people I know who have heard it. So let's give that experience a little test here and play your recording of Philip Sawyer's Second Symphony, the opening 2 minutes, Allegro movement. Let's listen. Sorry for the abrupt ending, folks. That was the first few minutes of Philip Sawyer's Second Symphony as conducted by Kenneth Woods, who's on the phone with his orchestra of the Swan. Now, Kenneth, this is not a part of your project, but it in some way inspired it. Is that right?
That's right. The piece was commissioned by a conductor named Robert Troy, who at the time was the director of the Sydenham Festival in London. It was premiered there under Robert's baton with the London Mozart Players. And after the premiere, the critic Robert Matthew Walker said something that I've seen many times in reviews of Philip's music since then, which is, this is the kind of music people have been waiting a generation to hear.
Yeah.
The reaction to it was really amazing. Robert sadly fell ill not long after that, and that's why the opportunity to record it came to me. But in the process of doing the recording, it just really hit me like a ton of bricks that this is what it's really all about. When I became then, not long after that, the principal conductor of the ESO, I thought the first thing I should do is actually ask for a symphony. And so I asked Philip to write a symphony for my new orchestra, and he said he'd be happy to do so. And a few months later, his third symphony, which is a much bigger piece than the second symphony, showed up. And it was in the process of sort of going through that score and thinking, wow, you know, this is amazing stuff, that maybe, you know, we should make this more than a one-off. And somehow I thought the idea of a set of nine symphonies, you know, we've got nine symphonies by Beethoven and Bruckner and any number of other 19th century symphonists, but by all different composers, would be a fantastic project in a way to spark a conversation about, you know, why the symphony is still important today.
And so are you counting the Sawyer's Third as one of the nine, or is it beginning with the David Matthews that we're going to listen to later?
I would count the Philip Sawyer's Third Symphony as the debut work. Okay. In that cycle. It's the inspiration, the fountainhead of all of it, I think. And it sets the bar very high, which is always a good thing. I mean, I think the value of the project will depend entirely on the quality of the works that it produces. And so I thought, you know, let's set the bar incredibly high with someone who I know will write a really great piece. And it took the time, really, from the delivery of the piece, which came very quickly after asking for it, to being able to do an actual premiere and recording. It took a good 2.5 years of planning and fundraising to make it possible.
Oh, I mean, isn't it sad that you have to spend
reasons why people don't do new symphonies. The fact that it's an incredible economic and logistical challenge to put one on.
Now, you did this with your English Symphony Orchestra. I have another Sawyer's recording of you, which I listened to today again, and that was the one you did with Sawyer's Violin Concerto, his Concerto for Trumpet, Strings, Timpani, and Valley of Vision, and Elegiac Rhapsody for Trumpet and String. Wonderful music. Wonderful music.
It is absolutely amazing stuff. I mean, if there's a more engaging violin concerto written in the last 30 years, I don't know what it is. And that might be the best trumpet concerto ever written, I think. You know, it's just absolutely sensational. It completely transcends the trumpet. I mean, it's very idiomatically written for the trumpet, but it allows the trumpet to be showcased as a melodic instrument, not just,
right,
you know, as a sort of brass,
right,
instrument.
Right.
This incredible, very Mahlerian slow movement that work has is really extraordinary.
Well, we're going to hear...
It's absolutely on an incredible roll right now. I'm getting ready for the next set of recordings in January, which will be his fourth symphony and his big tone poem, Homage to Kandinsky. And those are also both...
Which you'll be playing at the Mahlerfest in Boulder.
Yes, I'm really looking forward,
yeah,
to that. I think there's a strong influence of Mahler throughout Philip's work, and you'll hear that in the Third Symphony for sure. But the Kandinsky homage is particularly Mahlerian. If you know the Sixth Symphony of Mahler at all, there's a lot of that kind of volatility and powerhouse writing for a very big orchestra. So it sits very comfortably alongside a Mahler symphony.
Well, let's listen to you conducting the English Symphony Orchestra in this Third Symphony of Philip Sawyer's. We're going to begin again with the first movement to give our listeners a sense of where the composer begins. We'll come back and we'll say a few words and then go listen to this amazing, as you say, Mahlerian slow movement. But first, the first movement opening Sawyer's Third Symphony.
Thank you.
Kenneth Woods, I can't tell you how many times, and you allude to this in your own notes, over the last 20 or 30 years, I've gone to a concert, and they have stuck some contemporary composition at the very beginning, as you say, usually 7 minutes long or something. And I'll sit there in total bafflement and enduring it and just wondering why people aren't running for the doors. But yet with this, the opening to this Third Symphony of Philip Sawyer's, I'm saying, yeah, I want to know where this is going. This is a story I want to hear.
I often end up programming Philip's music alongside Beethoven's, and there's two, I think, reasons that that pairing always feels very natural. First of all, both of them work with music in a very stripped-down way. There's never anything extraneous or superficial in the music, whether you're talking about the actual melodic material of the music or the way in which it's put across to the audience. You know, that you notice in the excerpt that you just heard there, there's no superfluous percussion flourishes or fancy schmancy harp lasandi, all the little sonic bits of twirly whirliness that we often see in fairly recent music. There's a directness, and everything in Philip's music feels like it's there for a very compelling reason. And the other thing he shares with Beethoven is the sense of narrative function that the music is always taking you on a journey. And like Beethoven, I think this piece is directed from the very first note to the end of the work in one particular direction. And I think in the tradition of a piece like Beethoven's Fifth and Ninth Symphonies, Brahms' First, Shostakovich's Fifth, this is a classic journey from incredible darkness to incredible light, all achieved with a sense of, you know, unerring purpose and intensity. Something very interesting with the very opening of the piece, that very beautiful cello melody, which opens this sort of fugal beginning,
yes.
And, you know, gradually voices pile in on top
it
of it.
It goes to the winds and then to the brass. And
that melody itself outlines the whole journey of the piece, in that it's a 12-tone melody, but beautiful in spite of that, or in coexistence with that. People often think of 12-tone music as inherently unpleasant. But in this 12-tone melody, he starts out in the world of G minor, emphasizing the notes of the G minor chord and E flat, which is an important note in G minor. And the end of the melody ends with all of the notes that are important in G major. And that's basically the journey of the piece from minor to major, from darkness to light.
Well, you and I have communicated back and forth a little about this second movement, and it's really good. So let's listen to where Sawyer's takes this story. This Third Symphony, you're going to listen to the last few minutes of the second movement of Sawyer's Third Symphony. magnificent. I had to remind myself to breathe. Kenneth Woods, when you were recording that, what did it feel like to be in the middle of it?
It's awe-inspiring. It really is. The day we recorded that symphony, we did the whole recording in one day, from sight reading to finishing the last note of the last movement. It's one of the golden memories of my professional life, and just absolutely unforgettable. I wouldn't presume to speak for every colleague in the orchestra, but the impact this music has on musicians is also very, very powerful. And, you know, it's something very special when you all feel that you're working together on something that's affecting you all on a very deep emotional level personally, and rewarding, you know, everything that you give to this music, it gives something back. And you can't say that about every piece ever written. So it was an incredibly special day. And, you know, what's astonishing about the work is that, you know, you finish the first movement, you think, well, this is just amazing. Well, that's great. And then the second movement's even better. You think, well, how can you carry on from that? But the piece does. And, you know, it's all going towards an end, which I think is worthy of what everything that's come before it.
Yeah, and you asked for this symphony on top of all that.
I did. I mean, it's, he very sweetly dedicated it to me, so this is a little bit like, you know, Archduke Ferdinand with Beethoven. You know, this is my little bit of music history. Someday
well,
take this off and say, who the hell was Ken Woods, you know?
Well, he's the guy that asked for it and recorded it. We'll be back with Kenneth Woods, conductor, composer, cellist, writer, after a brief message.
St. Vincent de Paul Detroit invites you to the inaugural Top Hat Ball at Coble Hall on Saturday, October 12th. The special guest and keynote speaker will be Cardinal Joseph Tobin, the Archbishop of Newark, New Jersey. The Top Hat Ball will feature a gourmet dinner with reception and entertainment, celebrating the missional work of St. Vincent de Paul throughout southeastern Michigan. For more information or to purchase tickets or sponsor this event, go to tophatball.org. That's tophatball.org. See the possible at today's St. Vincent de Paul Detroit.
Can psychology and spirituality work together to treat mental health? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Join me on Power from the Pews when my guest, theologian and psychology student, Dr. Mark Ginter, and I discuss this question. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Each week we go into the Ave Maria CD library. We pull on a talk or two to see what our Lord might have to say to us. Most of these talks are recorded at area gatherings and conferences. Most of the speakers are nationally known. The topics are varied, but they are all centered on the Lord, and they all are worth your listening time. You're back from Mass. It's not yet dinner time. Why not sit back and join us? Be fed on the Lord. Listen this and every Sunday afternoon at 3 for Putting On the Mind of Christ on 990 WDEO in the Metro Detroit area and 1440 WMAX in the Saginaw Valley. Putting On the Mind of Christ is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Conductor Kenneth Woods, who is the principal conductor of the English Symphony Orchestra and records quite prolifically, and we're talking about the 21st Century Symphony Project. We've listened to the inspiration for it, Philip Sawyer's Second Symphony, the first fruits of it, the Sawyer's Third, and now we're going to move to a composer who I think is better known than Philip Sawyer, David Matthews, and his Ninth Symphony. How did this come about, Ken?
Well, I mean, it just sort of all but dropped in my lap. I mean, David has been one of the leading figures in British music for you know, more than a generation now. He came to prominence as a protege of Benjamin Britten. He and his brother Colin Matthews were heavily involved in preparing the performing version of Mahler's 10th Symphony that most of us do. David departed from the path taken by most of his contemporaries by returning to the traditional genres that Beethoven focused on, the string quartet, the piano trio, and the symphony. And that's been his life's work ever since. I was at the premiere of his 7th Symphony, at which point the idea of him writing a piece for me was just, you know, completely incomprehensible. It would have never occurred to me that such a thing would happen. But we met at one of my early ESO concerts, and we hit it off socially, and he came to me with the idea for a 9th symphony that he wanted to write, and I mean, of course, I just jumped at the chance. And it's a remarkable piece. You know, I think in a way Mahler set the bar so high 100 years ago for what a symphony could be in terms of ambition, that the question for everyone since then is, you know, what do you do after a piece like Mahler's 3rd Symphony or Mahler's 9th Symphony? And, you know, in David's case, I think, although he grew up immersed in Mahler, the example of Sibelius has been hugely influential, especially in the latter half of his compositional career. So it's a work on a Sibelian scale, you know, 25 minutes instead of 90 minutes. And in this case, there's an innocence and a naivete to the piece, which is intentional.
Yes, I note that, yes.
Which I think is really wonderful. He had written a little solstice carol for his wife, Jennifer, which is about the simplest, most straightforward bit of musical writing you can imagine. You know, key of C major, totally sweethearted, innocent, and naive. And he said not long after he'd written the little tune for her, he was improvising at the piano and found himself coming back to that little melodic idea. After a couple of days, he thought, you know, actually, I could do something with this idea. And so he decided to write a symphony. And to write a symphony in what was, I think, then 2016, 2017, in C major on the basis of such innocent musical material is pretty revolutionary, pretty daring. But he's written a fantastic work, and I think the excerpt we're going to hear first is the opening of the symphony, and the first thing you'll hear is that very sweet-natured little melodic seed from which grows the entire work.
Let's listen to that. As you're conducting, again, the English Symphony Orchestra. David Matthews' Symphony No. 9 I know Kenneth Woods, when I first heard that, I thought this was written by a happy man.
David sort of radiates a sense of inner peace as a person. He's made, you know, good choices about how he wants to spend his time on this planet. And I think you can see in his disposition and in his music that he feels like he's chosen a reasonably good path. I mean, his music is not without angst and passion and power when called for, but this is a very sunlit work.
It also invites you in, and of course when you get in and we see some of the clouds that pass over, let's listen to what he does to his third movement, slow movement. Let's listen to the last 3 minutes. That's just delightful. We've just been hearing the David Matthews Ninth Symphony in C major, the end of the third movement. And Kenneth Woods, I know this has been reviewed quite well in the record magazines. You got to record it. Have you played it in concert form to an orchestra, to an audience?
Wow, it was an amazing experience when we did. All of the premieres of the 21st Century Symphonies have been amazing occasions. When we did David's Night, it was a concert just a little over a year ago in St. George's, Bristol, which is a wonderful venue with fantastic acoustic. Immediately before David's piece, we did the Elgar Cello Concerto with Sheku Kana Mason, who's the young cellist who played at the Royal Wedding earlier this
year.
And, you know, about the most famous and exciting young musician in the United Kingdom right now. You can imagine with him playing the Elgar, the atmosphere was absolutely electric and the audience went bananas at the end of it. And one might feel concerned that to then follow that piece with a new symphony by a composer in his 70s might be a bit of an anticlimax for the audience. But in fact, when we finished the piece, the building exploded. It was
that's great.
Standing ovations are not normal in this country. You know,
unlike
Americans
here,
tend to stand up so they can get to their cars a little faster. But here, it's really reserved for the most special concerts, and the reaction of the audience was just completely overjoyed at the end of the performance, and I think that meant a lot to David to see the impact that this piece had had on the audience.
Well, in fact,
for the musician,
composers,
you feel like you're in the moment of bringing a really important thing to life.
And don't composers sometimes get in their head about writing a Ninth Symphony?
Well, yes, I told him to hurry up and write a tenth, please, to stop and hang around. He's written a lot since this piece. He hasn't written a tenth symphony yet, but he has written a concerto for orchestra. I said, David, why don't you just call it tenth symphony? And then you're done and you're safe and you can get on to other things. But I think he definitely will. I mean,
he will.
Both now this... Philip are writing with incredible fluency at this stage of their careers. So the pieces just seem
Thank
to follow
God for
one
that.
After another.
You know, the next composer, Christopher Gunning, I knew from two sources before you introduced me to his Second Symphony, which is part of your project. I knew him as a film composer, but I also had heard his First Symphony many years ago in a recording and was quite taken with it. So how did your Christopher Gunning Second Symphony come about?
Well, this is one of these happy accidents that exists in parallel to the 21st Century Symphony project itself. I'd become aware of Chris's music a few years back, and we traded emails and stuff, and he sent me a few recordings of his earlier works. The Fifth Symphony made a huge impression on me. And over the years, we said, wouldn't it be great if we could do something? Well, in the end, he had the chance to do a new disc of his symphonies with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales for Signum Records, and he had conducted the previous recordings of his symphonies that were out there, but he thought on this occasion it would be better to have a different conductor. So I was very, very thrilled and honored to do it. So we recorded his 2nd, 10th, and 12th symphonies back in April, and these are all very powerful, effective.
But these have not been released yet.
No, they haven't. So our audience is getting a sneak peek here. The second has been broadcast on BBC Radio 3 once, but I think the CD comes out in December, and it's going to be really something. The second was a piece he withdrew after he finished it and revised it quite extensively. So it's really practically a brand new work, and it's a work that embodies a lot of what he's learned in the previous sort of 10 or 11 up to that point. I think the work on the second comes between the 11th and 12th symphonies. It's a war symphony in spirit, very evocative and powerful stuff.
Yes, and we're going to hear, before anybody else, we're going to hear the last few minutes of the second movement of Christopher Gunning's Second Symphony.
Thank you.
just beautiful. The end of the second
amazing
movement.
Amazing stuff. Yeah.
You know, go ahead, Ken.
Had a first movement of the symphony, which is a sort of warlike slow burn to a huge explosion of violence. The second movement, you know, there's this sense of almost the stillness and the smoking rubble after everything that's come before it. It's really powerful stuff.
I recommend that you, Kenneth Woods, put together a 21st Century Symphony Project marathon, like over 3 days somewhere in England or America, probably in England, where you play all these symphonies.
Wouldn't it be a fantastic thing? I mean, maybe that's the thing to do when we get towards the end of the project, is to play them all live as they're meant to be heard, back to back. It would be a wonderful thing to do.
I think you'd have, of course, you would need
very sturdy brass players to do it all.
Yeah, you need sponsors and all that, but I know you would have public support. This music is so good.
I think so. I would hope so. Yeah.
Before we move to Matthew Taylor's Fifth Symphony, tell us about some of the other works that you have commissioned as part of this project.
Well, the goal of the budget is that, you know, for each piece, we commission, record, and premiere the work. So it definitely gets a live outing. It definitely gets a recording. And it has a reason to be. And our goal with all of these is also to tie the recording of the symphony to a disc entirely of that composer's music. So hopefully, as the project goes on with each composer, we're doing a little something to lift their profile and make their wider output known.
Right.
I would certainly say that in the case of the Sawyers and Matthews CDs, you know, the other works on the discs are just as worthwhile and just as important and show different sides of them as composers. So next up in the project will be the First Symphony by James Francis Brown. In a way, David Matthews is a kind of leader of a generation of composers who are involved in the UK in reinvigorating some of the traditional forms like the concerto and the string quartet. Matthew Taylor and David are close, and James Francis Brown is another one who I think you can see connections in the language of his music with that of David Matthews. James I've known for a while, and we gave the London premiere of his clarinet concerto a couple years ago, which was a very beautiful piece recently recorded by the conductor George Vass. I commend that recording to everyone. He has not written the symphony yet, so this will be the first symphony in the project. This is something he's wanted to do for 30 years, you know, and that's one of the nice things that I hope this project can do, is create opportunities for composers to write the pieces they've always wanted to write. So that'll be premiered this coming summer at the Three Choirs Festival, which is the oldest music festival in the world.
Right.
And that'll be on a program celebrating Beethoven's 250th birthday, so alongside Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And just as a very quick aside, Beethoven's Seventh Symphony was also on the same program when Philip Sawyer's Second Symphony, which we heard back at the beginning of this program, was premiered. And Philip's piece, the one stipulation of the commission when he was asked to write it, was that it had to be for the exact same forces as Beethoven's Seventh.
Oh, that's great. Now, Matthew Taylor's Fifth Symphony, again, you've recorded it, but it hasn't been released, but you've been able to allow us to use a portion of the first movement. Tell us about this.
We premiered this work in Cadogan Hall in London last summer, and again, it was an electrifying, unforgettable occasion. We recorded it at the time. The disc will come out next year alongside his Fourth Symphony. But even though that disc isn't quite ready to go yet, I've very tenderly asked our producer if he would get an assembly done of the first movement of the symphony, which he's very, very graciously done. So big thanks to Simon Fox-Gall, our producer, for making it possible to share this music with
yes.
the listeners today. So this will be a broadcast premiere. I don't think any of this music has been ever heard outside of the confines of Cadogan Hall last summer.
Well, I want our listeners to know that I'm sorry we can't play the whole thing, but it is powerful. My one response to it when I heard it to Kenneth was, wow. And we're going to be hearing the last 2.5 minutes of this first movement. It gives you an idea of the power of and the thrust, as it were, of Matthew Taylor's composition, quite remarkable and really awe-inspiring. Let's listen to a yet unreleased recording conducted by Kenneth Woods of the Matthew Taylor Symphony No. 5. To hear the rest of that. That was the first movement of Matthew Taylor's Fifth Symphony in a recording that will be released, I believe, next year, as you said, Kenneth. And who is your first trumpet?
Oh, Stephen Pennycad on that recording. He's a fantastic, very outstanding young British trumpet player.
Congratulate him from all of us.
Proud and lucky to have him in the group with some wonderful players. You know,
the whole brass section.
Yeah, we're listening to the David Matthews earlier, the wonderful E-flat clarinet solo that Alison Lambert plays.
That was lovely.
One. And it's wonderful to take the players on this journey, too, and see what their contribution is to this series of premieres and recordings. We've tried to keep the identity of the orchestra, you know, as cohesive and coherent from recording to recording as we reasonably can. Oh,
and
one other thing about this first movement, because I think it's very interesting, you know, Matthew confessed to me that he wanted to write a movement that had the kind of terse, explosive energy of something like the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. You know, this is a challenge that he'd wanted to tackle forever, and
he did.
I think he's done a very admirable job. He said there was a fair amount of banging of the head against the wall while writing it, and some complaints from his daughter and wife that. Unfortunate language was used while he was at it's really an incredible thing. The piece ends with a memorial to his mother. It's a long adagio finale, very, very heartfelt, with a sort of Brucknerian grandeur to it. It's a very personal, very powerful piece, and just so proud to have been involved in getting it out to the public.
Well, Kenneth Woods, I hope that you'll come back and make us on Church and Culture, all of our listeners, part of this journey too. It's so compelling, and I think it's so important. And I'm very grateful that you took the time to be on the show.
It's a great, great pleasure, and I hope to continue the conversation.
We will. We will, definitely. And to all of you who are listening, I'll be back in a moment with another wonderful guest.